Today's gospel is from Matthew 10, and it's the story, of how Jesus sends out the disciples to preach and heal. And there are two things I want you to pay attention to. The first one is, Jesus tells them that he will be present with them when they go out. And then there's this wonderful verse about a cup of cold water. You'll hear about that again. Jesus said, "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive a prophet's reward, and whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous." And here it is. "Whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward." This is the gospel for this day.
Thanks be to God.
You may be seated. There aren't any kids here, but so I'm not going to do the whole children's sermon, but I do want to show you one thing. Pastor Eric, every once in a while, when he's at a bookstore or the library, he'll see a book that he thinks I should read. So he's done this three or four times. And the last one was this neat little book that was written, I can't remember his name, by an art teacher who sounds sometimes like a pastor. And I kind of like that because I'm a pastor who sometimes sounds like an art teacher. And the guy, this little book says basically two things, as I recall, that we should get back to the art class we had in elementary school. Because one of the things that all those kids know is that they are artists. They are creators. And we tend to forget that sometimes. And that's part of what the sermon's about. And the other thing is about those little kids, art, is they're really generous about it. I mean, they just can't wait to give it away. I mean, there are thousands of refrigerators all over the land filled with art. You know, so I brought one of those, only I framed it. Because my house, for example, has some wonderful paintings by great art. I think, you know, Richard Kammer and Bill McEnroe and Oregon Water, Michael Schlichten, watercolorist, and you know some of mine, and this one, which is done by Sarah Margaret Gompert Nelson, my granddaughter, who is now 8 years old. She did this when she was, I think, 5 or 6. So I took it from the refrigerator and hung it up with the rest of them, just to remind her that she's an artist too, see. And so those two things, that generosity and that artist, that's part of what's going on, as you're about to hear. I mean, it is time for the sermon now, right? Yeah. God's beloved people. So, one of the reasons I wanted to tell you about this process of creating this mural up here is to say that every creative thing we make is a process. You know, of course. You know, whether it's a banner or a mural or a painting or a poem or a friendship or a dinner or a mission endeavor or a marriage or a profit, non-profit like Safi or even a sermon. Art is a process. And the art object, whatever it is, those and many other things, is a celebration of that process. So, I thought it might be helpful, or otherwise it might not make any sense at all to my sermon, if I explain the process a little bit anyway of how this sermon came to be. Because there were some things I just could not get out of my head. When Pastor Beth asked me to preach this week, so I couldn't get this creation poem out of my head. I think, you know, it's the foundation piece, for, as I mentioned, for this whole season. It's meant to influence, and we're meant to remember it throughout all the readings in all the Sundays of this ordinary season. And I think there are at least four things that are so important for us that still inspire and challenge us about this creation poem. First one is God created. It's not just a big bang, it's God's big bang. Secondly, it is good. It is good. You know, one of the challenges I mentioned for doing this was to unify all these separate days. One of the ways the poet did that in words was a number of ways, but one of them is there's this main phrase going throughout that whole poem after every day, and God saw that it was good. Except when he created human beings, then it was very good. So that's the third. And then we are created, we are called to be caretakers, caregivers of the earth. Carbon and ozone were faith issues centuries before they became environmental and political issues. And fourth, and this is the one, as I mentioned, that I'm going to be speaking about today, is this image of God. When God created humans in his own image. And 2 weeks ago, when Beth preached on Trinity Sunday, when this text was there, Beth preached and spent some time talking about the image of God as community. And that's central. But there's one other thing, I think, and that is, like I mentioned, image of God. One of the only things we know about God when he mentions, talks about that, is he created the earth. That must mean that we are too creators or artists in one way or another. That image of God, that this artist, creator on one hand, in community on the other, I just cannot escape. And the thing that nailed it to me in this putting the sermon together was that verse from the gospel. Whoever gives even a cup of cold water, a cup of to one of these little ones, you know, they will have their reward. So we got this huge big thing, this whole creation of the cosmos on the one hand, and a cup of cool water on the other. And I'm going to try to put them together. One other in this process thing that this came to the sermon. I'm in a book reading group, and a little while ago, one of the books we read was called The Art Forger, which I really loved. It's a kind of a historical novel. It's kind of a mystery about an art heist at the Gardner Museum in Boston, in a forger that tried to take its place about Degas. And it's still not solved. That's one of the few that has never been solved to this day. And then I found it so fascinating, you know, how they actually do this, that I immediately got another book called Provenance about the same thing. And this is a true story. It takes place in London about this art forger schemer who, one of the ways that you see the experts authenticate a piece of art as a true
you know, Da Vinci or Chagall or whoever, is its provenance. That is, its history, its ownership, its who owned it, where, what museums it's been in. It's got catalogs and, you know, where it's been, who bought it, from whom. It's kind of a lineage sort of thing. And what this guy did, I mean, this is fairly recently, what this guy did was he got into the and faked the provenance, all that kind of stuff. He put in fake catalogs and ownership things and all that kind of stuff in the archives of places like the Tate Gallery. It was just unbelievable. So all that kind of, those books are in my head. All that kind of stuff's in my head. And Beth asked me to preach this week, and I... So, all that's there as I remind you of August 20th, 1911. In case you don't remember, it's a Sunday afternoon in Paris. Hundreds of people are strolling through the Louvre, taking in the treasures of that renowned art museum. Among them, however, is a guy named Vincenzo Perugia and a couple of his friends. These guys have more on their minds than art appreciation. At an opportune time, they sneak into a storage closet and spend the night there. On Monday morning, when the museum is closed for maintenance, they emerge in work clothes. They then proceed as nonchalantly as they possibly can be to remove from a wall of the museum its most famous possession, Da Vinci's Mona Lisa. Vincenzo wraps a cloth about it and walks out a side door. But that's only half the plan. Shoplifting one of the world's most famous paintings was only one step in his scheme that he had been working on for months and months. Vincenzo Perugia was only an amateur art thief. His real job was an art forger. Months earlier, he had let it be known that the Mona Lisa would be available. He found six unethical art collectors who would each pay $300,000 for it. You have to remember, this is 1911. And then he had six forgeries available all before that Monday in August when he walked out of the Louvre with the real thing. A couple of days after the Mona Lisa, the thing was announced that it was stolen, he delivered the six forgeries and they were all paid for. So, Vincenzo came away with $1.8 million and he still had the real Mona Lisa. That's what he really was. You know, less a thief than a forger. And Da Vinci isn't the only one whose works have obeyed God's command to be fruitful and multiply. From Picasso to Van Gogh to Chagall, you know, forging is a pretty big business and a problem for the art world. Some who can't make it on their own are making it nonetheless. You know, instead of studying the masters, they just copy them. So, I should confess, the ideas, thoughts, and even some of the words of this sermon come from not only me, but from some masters. The Yahwist who wrote the poem, Matthew, Beth Udo Galarno, a guy named Ted Loader, James Van Thulen, Peter Gnomes, Lawrence Cruz, some Irish monks, and me. But they have never been put together in just this way before. So we are created in the image of God. When I was thinking about that art forger, what in the world does that mean? Created in the image of God. What was that guy thinking? Image of God, when about all we know about God is he created the earth, the cosmos, and everything in it. What are we supposed to be? Little forgers of the divine? How can we possibly be but small copyists of God? Imitators of the creator of the cosmos? What was that guy thinking? That's why I so appreciated Beth's emphasis 2 weeks ago that the image of God was all about community. And then that line from today's gospel that just hit it for me. Whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones. You see, when I think of the image of God, I tend to think creator, artist. Some of you have heard that from me more than once before. But in the biblical tradition, the image of God must hold those two things together. Image of God must be community and creator, artist. And that, as this Yahwist poet said, is very good indeed. Peter Noems, the pastor at Harvard, wrote this. There is in the Celtic mythology the notion of thin places in the universe where the visible and invisible world come into their closest proximity. Think the Irish to come up with such a lovely, poetic, powerful image. Thin places where the eternal rubs close to time. The Irish monks believe that it is at such frontiers that God and people are at most intimately present to each other. It's a great image. All of us can probably name some thin places that we've experienced. Noems suggests that suffering may be one. Joy, another. Mystery, yet another. And we could add loss, death, birth, love, relationships of care and trust and comfort. Are there really thin places where God touches us with comfort and compassion and hope? In today's gospel, Jesus says, he will show himself to Israel through the apostles who go out to preach and heal. He will be present in whoever gives even a cup of cold water to these little ones. A cup of cold water. It reminds me of those two short little parables that Jesus told. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone sowed in his field. It's the smallest of all the seeds, but when it grows, it's the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree so that birds come and make nests in its branches. And then right after that, he says, the kingdom of God is like yeast that a woman takes and mixed in 3 measures of flour until all of it is leavened. A seed, a little yeast, a cup of cold water. It all touches on the thin places where two worlds, two dimensions rub together. It's easy to focus on the mustard seed in the east and the cup of cool water, yet it is critical to remember. There was a man and a woman, and let's say a child, who did those small acts of planting a seed, putting the yeast in the flour, and sharing a cup of cool water. Jesus is saying that such small acts have great consequences. No one realizes at the time. Part of the mystery is that the seed in the yeast and the cup of water carry their own future with them, even though that future is not apparent at the moment. But the rest of the mystery is that that future depends on the small acts of the man who plants the seed, the woman who adds the yeast, the child who shares a cup of cool water. That is the way of God's kingdom. Lawrence Krauss is a big-time physicist who a while ago wrote in the New York Times that all the information in all the books ever written would require about a million kilobytes of storage. Now, I'm not quite sure what a kilobyte is, but you might. And the rest of us can take Krauss's word that a million of them would store more reading that we're going to get done in the dog days of this summer. Krauss goes on, that amount, a million kilobytes, is only 1/10,000,000th of a billionth of what it would take to store the pattern of a single human being. So that using currently available hard disks that would store 10 gigabytes of information each, and stacking them one on top of the other, you would have a pile that would reach about a third of the way to the center of the galaxy, about 10,000 light years. Now, if you are boggled by that, you are boggled by you and that person alongside of you and the one sitting right in front of you. The psalmist was indeed right when he proclaimed that each of us is fearfully and wonderfully made. And all those gigabytes stacked from here to the Big Dipper are not only about intelligence, or even primarily about intelligence. They are about the wondrous capacities we have for compassion, for creativity, for connecting, for relating, listening, talking, singing, capacities for sensitivity, for forgiveness and beauty, for justice and worship. In a mysterious way, God uses us to be bearers of comfort and hope to one another, rather than being petty forgers and random copyists. Each of us is one of those thin places where the visible and invisible worlds of human and divine rub up against each other. Think of it. It's wondrous. And that is what it means that we are made in the image of God. Think of yourself. Think of the people you touch in your work, your community, your family. All the listening and responding and supporting and caring you do. And all the others do for you. We are a thin place with and for one another. The God who created all this and is creating it still is bigger, more ingenious, sneakier than we can ever pin down. The kingdom of God, the kingdom of the invisible world rubbing against this one, has room enough for angry people, people who grieve and cry, frightened people, people who doubt and are guilty of all sorts of stuff, who struggle, who get sick and die, yet do wonderful, beautiful, incredible things. People like us. God holds us like the earth holds a seed, raises us like life from a seed, like yeast raises the mess of flour and makes bread, food, life of it, of us. That's what God's image is about. A thin place, like a cup of cool grace and peace and all that good stuff.